for action, and there's been a request to carry that over in later on into the agenda. And I believe that the next item to call up is item number, is Shelter Cove would be called up. Item four, which is Shelter Cove. So we'll call that on the agenda.
Can we take item six first?
Okay, item six for Crescent City. We'll call up item six. Is there anyone, are there representatives from Crescent City in the audience?
Duct tape.
Okay. And to Crescent City, do you have any objection with us proceeding with this earlier in the agenda?
Absolutely not.
Okay. I thought so, but I wanted to make sure.
The sooner we can go home, the happier we'll be. How do we... Okay.
So I'll call on staff, and this would be, to make it clear, a public hearing on order number R1-2007-0008, and it's the Crescent City Harbor District Seafood Processing Wastewater Treatment Facility in Delnor County. And with that, I'll call on staff to make their presentation.
Do you have a hearing procedure swearing in?
Well, let's see. No, I don't, but what I'll do is all members who want to testify on this matter, please raise your right hand. Do you promise to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God? And with that, we will call on staff to begin. And I'll, if I give them back their report. But.
Good morning. I'm Tom Dunbar, staff engineer. Before I start, I would like to introduce our files into the hearing record. The summary of the issues is contained in a staff report, but there are also some handouts that you received this morning, and I would like to go over those for the record and to make sure that you have copies of them.
And just to clarify, has Crescent City seen the handouts?
Yes, the staff report. And yeah.
And you have no objection of them coming into the record?
The things that were handed out essentially are comments from Crescent City itself, the Crescent City Harbor District, a package that the Harbor District gave me this morning, and also some comments that we received late last week from the seafood processor and from the Harbor District. So they have those. You're seeing them right now. So I just wanted to make sure that you got copies and that they were introduced into the record. In your agenda, there is an item number six package, which contains a executive officer summary report. It contains a draft order. It contains the administrative civil liability complaint that was issued. It also has comments, fairly lengthy comments. Those are the blue pages. Those are comments received from the seafood processor. The pink pages are the staff response to those comments. And also in the package was a notice of hearing. So that's what you have in your agenda. What you should have received this morning is a copy of a letter from Thomas Fitzgibbon, attorney for the seafood processor. My copy is salmon-colored. We also received a fax from Crescent City Harbor District. That's dated March 9th. I don't know what color that is in your package. The package that Crescent City Harbor District gave me this morning, that has the first thing should be a copy of the Harbor District letterhead and a statement by Mr. Richard Young. letter from the city of, a letter from the county of Del Norte Board of Supervisors, a letter from the city of Crescent City, city manager, and then an annual report for discharge monitoring year 2006. Finally, some revisions to the draft order that is contained in your agenda package, and we'll talk about those a little later. You may recall that the matter was first scheduled for hearing at the board's. Oh, you also have a copy of the PowerPoint presentation that I'm going to show here.
Mr. Massey's missing his little packet.
I'm missing this one. There we go. Thank you. I got that part. No, I don't have any of the colors. No, very special. The only one didn't get it.
You guys missing anything? Well, you'll see it here.
So to clarify, the packet is a March 15th letter, Board of Harbor Commissioners. A March 13th County of Del Norte County letter. A City Manager Richard Young letter of March 9th.
City Manager would be Eli Naffa?
Yeah.
And an annual monitoring report for year 2006.
Okay.
That was the package that the Harbor District provided this morning.
Okay, and then a Kennedy and Jenks Consultants.
Oh, that should be in here, yes.
Report.
That's the last item in this package. Kennedy Jenks proposal.
Okay. Is it clear to the Harbor District and to the seafood representatives what's being introduced into the record? And do you have any objection to being introduced into the record? Some of these materials are late. Does any board member have any objection to them being entered into the record? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to deem them admitted to the record as detailed. Sorry.
This is Samantha Olson. Yeah. I just wanted to state that the enforcement team doesn't object to these late submittals either.
Well, and just to clarify, because of the procedures, and I realize this is a split proceeding then, and you would be an interested party. Okay. And I assume on the other evidence that was introduced earlier, you have no objection to that as well? And you, okay, and you've received copies. Okay, thank you. Proceed.
Forward, use that one. Okay, gotcha. You may recall that this was scheduled for our February 8th board meeting, and on February 1st, the Harbor District realized that this penalty was pretty devastating to the district, and that it could affect future operations at the treatment facility. And so the district wrote a letter to the fish processor, Alber Seafoods, and said, you might have to close your plant, or we might have to close the plant. You won't be able to process. So a lot of interest was generated all of a sudden, and that has resulted in a rescheduling of the hearing today and a lot of paperwork, comments, and responses back and forth. So it's an unfortunate situation. I apologize for the confusion that it's created this morning. I'd like to start with the PowerPoint presentation showing some photographs of the facility, the Harbor District, things that we're talking about, so you might better understand the issues. Bill Rodriguez was a permanent employee of the board for quite a few years. He retired in 2000, came back to help us as a retired annuitant, and he did most of the work on this leading up to the board meeting, and wouldn't you know it, he's acting out as a retired employee, and he's on vacation, so I'm giving it today.
vacationing retired employee.
He's off somewhere. He isn't here. Oh, you know, I was told we can't dim these lights, so this is going to be difficult. As a matter of fact, you really can't see anything there. you have a copy in front of you that you can see, and I can... I can,
there's a realistic level of fog.
Of course, this is the Pacific Ocean out in the blue. The Crescent City Harbor you will see on your handout here, and then the city of Crescent City is just off to the north. Within the harbor, there are a lot of facilities. Fish processing is one, and... all of the harbor wastewater, including sanitary waste, go through a pressure line, actually more than one pressure line, over to the city wastewater treatment facility. Now, the sanitary wastes go untreated in a separate line to the wastewater facility that the city operates. The harbor district pre-treats, or actually treats, its own wastewater and discharges... They have a pressure line that goes along the harbor and out. The next slide, you'll probably see this a lot better, or a little bit later on. It goes bypasses the city's treatment facility, but uses the same outfall as the city's facility. Years ago, all of the seafood processing wastewater went into the city wastewater facility and was treated at the city's facility, but at times, during peak processing periods, it overloaded the city's facility. So a new treatment facility was built in the harbor, and that was roughly 1990, maybe the late 80s. So this is a close-up of the part of the harbor district that we're dealing with today. Within the harbor, here are some docks. These three docks here actually are used for the fishermen coming in to sell their catch and offload it. There are two buildings here that both were at one time used for seafood processing. Right now, only one is used for seafood processing. I believe at one time there were as many as three seafood processors in the Harbor District, and then there were two additional processors not in the Harbor District but connected to the city's wastewater treatment system. So there were a total of five processors in Crescent City at one time. Albert Seafood now is the only one processing. And wastewater from both of these treatment or both of these fisheries buildings goes into the treatment facility, and that is this complex of structures right here. There's a pre-treatment facility in this building, and then a storage tank for wastewater to be stored before it goes to the treatment plant, before it goes through the outfall past the city, Crescent City's treatment plant. They have their own treatment unit here, and I'll show you on the ground just what it looks like. It's fairly large, as you can see, just the stop sign for perspective. This is the pre-treatment, where they screen out the large solids. And then it goes into this, it's about a 500,000-gallon storage tank. And then this is a dissolved air flotation treatment system. It's a large circular tank, and the suspended solids and smaller particles are removed in that process. Then the effluent is pumped over to the outfall by the Crescent City Wastewater Treatment Plant, but it doesn't go through it. At times, because actual processing is intermittent, it doesn't happen all the time, depends on fishing seasons and weather. Wastewater is stored in this tank, and the pumps are turned on once a week just to keep them running, make sure everything's working fine. And the district calls that pump maintenance, and it will be referred to in some things here later on. They are allowed to discharge up to 1,000 gallons per day during pump maintenance, and there is no fish processing on those days. another washed-out picture. You can see it better on your handout. But the city of wastewater, the city of Crescent City's wastewater treatment facility is on the right, and the effluent line to the ocean goes across this little spit here to this island area, and there's an outfall just to the south of the Battery Point Lighthouse. A little better picture. This is at high tide, and that spit is inundated. This is the city's wastewater plant where the fish processing used to go, and now it bypasses it. And then the discharge point again is in the rocks right here, south of Battery Point Lighthouse. So a brief summary: the board staff tallied up violations according to mandatory minimum penalty provisions in the Water Code, and issued a complaint to the Harbor District for violations occurring from January 1, 2000 until June 30th of 06. The complaint was issued in the amount of $54,000, and it was issued December 11th, 2006. The district responded saying that they had misreported a couple of the flow rates in some of their monitoring reports, and two of the violations then were corrected, and the actual amount of mandatory minimum penalty came to $48,000. And the order, the draft order that you have in your package, only assesses a penalty of $48,000. And the complaint that was issued for $54,000, which now would be $48,000, gave the district two options. One was to pay the full amount, or two, to do a supplemental environmental project for $31,500 and pay the additional amount, or the remaining amount, into the state cleanup and abatement account. The seafood processor sent in comments and covered four issues that are outlined here. They're summarized in the staff report. Staff responded to those issues. Those are in the staff report also. In response to the staff response, then the seafood processor sent in comments last week, March 8th. And essentially what we came down to after all the paperwork went back and forth, comments and responses, was that the district felt that staff had a very narrow interpretation of a publicly owned treatment works serving a small community. And the reason for this issue to be resolved was that if you do meet the qualifications of a POTW, a publicly owned treatment works serving a small community, then you are eligible for a compliance project. And staff initially didn't think that the district met those conditions that are defined in the Water Code and other parts of the Clean Water Act. And staff said you can't do a compliance project, but you can do a supplemental environmental project. The district felt that because of their financial situation, being a small community and not having a lot of money, that they would prefer to spend that money on a compliance project rather than on a supplemental environmental project. They would rather solve the problem with the money than spend the money on something else. And also that it would minimize the amount of money paid into the cleanup and abatement account. When you do a supplemental environmental project, roughly 50% of the money that is in the ACL order would be paid into the state cleanup and abatement account. And if you do a compliance project, then it's a discretion of the board as to how much of that penalty would actually be paid into the cleanup and abatement account. So The last letter that I believe is the salmon-colored letter that you have were the comments submitted last week by the discharger going back into the issue of small community and going into the definitions and also offering that they recognize that staff has incurred costs in going through this procedure, the enforcement action, and all the responses and having a hearing and all that. And they're willing to pay staff costs, but they would request that the remaining portion be used for a compliance project. The issue comes down to, and I think we all agree that it is a publicly owned treatment works, that the Harbor District is a public entity. They own the facility. It treats industrial waste, and one of the definitions there in Mr. Fitzgibbon's letter cites where a small community is a municipality, and a municipality has the authority to regulate municipal waste treatment, industrial waste treatment, pretreatment, sewer collection systems, and kind of defines the whole thing. And industrial wastes are included in that. And further, that they are a small community because it just serves one, maybe two or three processors, which is small. It's less than 10,000. Even the city of Crescent City as a whole or the surrounding area is less than 10,000. And the treatment facility also serves that community in an indirect way in providing jobs and buying fish and things like that. So they ask that you consider this and that you grant them authority to do a compliance project and come to terms with how much money would be paid into the cleanup and abatement account to defer staff costs. And so they're here to speak, but I would like to let you know that I have a revised order in response to all this, that if you do decide that they're eligible for a compliance project, I got another order with some revised language, and I also have staff costs. Right now, as of today, we estimate that staff costs amount to $10,100. There will be additional staff costs incurred by seeing the compliance project through to the end. Typically, we have requested that dischargers pay at least a portion of staff costs into the cleanup and abatement account. Very seldom do they pay the full amount, but it helps to defray our costs. And there's another issue later about paying staff costs, and I'll be going into more detail on that later. But the district has agreed to pay at least a portion of those. And right now, the way the draft order is written is $10,000. If you want to consider the draft order, we can talk about the staff cost in more detail later. I guess at this point, I would just turn it over to the district. They would like to make some comments.
Well, I have a couple things. One, do board members have questions of staff before we do that? I have just one. You gave quite an analysis of the POTW on the mandatory minimum fines, but there's also the language of a rural county, and this county only has 18,000 in population. Was that as examined as a possible additional exemption and an additional legal means to transfer the money towards a compliance project? Okay.
Did you want me to?
Yes.
I don't think it does. I don't think that we've looked at just because it's in the county, it would have to be county owned before we would apply it that way. We haven't done it. We haven't interpreted in that way in the past.
Yeah, I recognize that. Just a heads up, when we get them in some of the very rural counties, this question could come up again.
Right, and we have had situations where there were publicly owned treatment works in rural counties. It wasn't owned by the county, So we had not applied that in that way.
My next question is a procedural one. We've had the staff presentation. Samantha Olson indicated she represented the enforcement, and there's no guidelines that I know of the exact order. And my own thought is I'd rather have all the staff, well, I realize they're separate, but the enforcement to present if they have any additional presentations so that the applicant knows everything that's going to be presented by staff to respond to. So does anyone object to that order when we have split or an enforcement representative?
Okay, the way the separation of functions is working here is that Tom and I are the enforcement team, and so I'm advising Tom. And so that concludes our presentation, but I'd be happy to walk you through the legal analysis that I conducted to conclude that it's appropriate to allow compliance projects should the board choose to do so.
Could you please briefly recite that?
At first glance, when you hear small community, your initial reaction is it's serving an industrial waste producer. This is not a small community.
Samantha, would it be possible to back up maybe and talk about 13385K, the requirements there? That might be a good place to start for the board.
So the statute provides for mandatory minimum penalties for violations. Is this our response?
No.
Can you find it for me? And there's a provision in that law that allows a portion of that to go towards a compliance project that actually pays money to fix the problem if they meet the definition. And I'll give you the specific site here. Water Code 13385 Subdivision K, all or a portion of the mandatory minimum penalties against a publicly owned treatment work serving a small community may instead be used toward completion of a compliance project. And then I'm just going to read you like three different definitions because you got to follow then each as it's defined. The term POTW means a treatment works as defined by Section 212 of the Clean Water Act, which is owned by a state or municipality as defined by Section 5024 of the Act. Okay, Section 212 of the Clean Water Act defines treatment works as any device and system used in storage, treatment, recycling, and reclamation of municipal sewage or industrial waste of a liquid nature to implement Section 1281. So far the district meets all of these, and we'll keep going. The term municipality means any city, town, borough, county, parish, district, association, or other public body created by or pursuant to state law and having jurisdiction over the disposal of sewage, industrial wastes, or other wastes. And so the district meets that criteria. And finally, small community under Water Code Section 79084 means a municipality, which we've already defined to include industrial waste, with a population of 10,000 persons or less. Well, one is less than 10,000, and so it meets that criteria as well. And so when you actually track down the law, they fit for a compliance project.
Thank you. Just one other procedural question. In the past, when we've had split staff, then the staff that advised the board could also make comments. And so, one, I just want to make sure you don't have any objections to the evidence that's been brought before us. And two, do you have any comments separate from the presentation the enforcement team?
No, I don't at this time.
Does that conclude your presentation?
Yes.
Are there any questions from the board? Okay, we will call up Richard Young from the Crescent City Harbor District.
It's the tape. It's duct taped on. And the tape is not working. We're having
pretty good.
And my first question to you is, did you have any questions you wanted to address to staff before we begin?
No.
Okay.
King.
Not necessarily. I want to thank them. They've been very helpful in explaining the process to us over the telephone over recent days, and I think Mr. Dunbar gave a very accurate statement of the problems that we face and of the conditions that we have. I'd like to point out just, I think, one maybe minor difference. As he went over the treatment plant that we operate in Crescent City, he mentioned the dissolved air flotation part of that plant. That's not operational. In fact, the way we treat the discharge water at this point is we simply pump it through a screen out the solids, and then it goes directly into the ocean. So that dissolved air flotation tank is not used currently. We do use the storage tank and the screening. What we discharge is seafood wastewater. It's not municipal sewage. It's water that comes from the seafood processing plants in Crescent City. Currently, only one of them is active, and then only part of the year. What they do is they cook Dungeness crabs, and then the wastewater from cooking the crabs, same kind of water that you'd have in a pot at home if you cooked crabs, goes in through this discharge system. Also, the water from cleaning the plant, and if they're shelling crabs or that sort of thing, that wastewater goes through this system and into the Pacific Ocean. Other times of the year, they process Pacific whiting or hake. It's a ground fish caught off our coast, and they also sometimes process sablefish or Dover sole or other ground fish. We're hopeful, if we can work this out, that they'll do more in the future. So we need this plant. There's a written statement in front of you. Rather than just sit here and blindly read that, I think I'll hit the highlights from it, and you can certainly read it and get the background information for yourself. But I'd like to hit the highlights that this plant is necessary because it reduces the burden on the city of Crescent City's municipal treatment plant. In the past, when the water was discharged through that plant, it certainly was more cost-effective for us, but the city found it an enormous burden on that plant, and they've been before you. In fact, they're in the midst of a $30 million upgrade to the local wastewater treatment plant in Crescent City that should provide for domestic waste and municipal sewage, and they believe that it's not cost-effective for us to discharge through their plant at this time, and that's why we need to maintain this permit. If we don't have this permit and we don't have this seafood or this wastewater treatment plant, we can't process seafood in Crescent City because we have no way of disposing of the wastewater. So that's why the district views it with alarm. I think the local community views it with alarm, and certainly our seafood processor who's currently there views it with a certain amount of alarm, because really the future of seafood processing is what's at stake there. We certainly understand that we have a problem when we don't meet the requirements of the discharge permit. We realize that's a problem and that we have to do something about that. The question in our minds is, well, what do we do about that and how do we approach that? And what we're proposing to you today is a series of steps that will lead us to a resolution of the problem. We think the first step is that we need to conduct an engineering study to try to determine what the potential or what the causes of these discharge violations are. And frankly, we don't really know at this point. We have a range of things that could be the cause. We believe it could be design flaws in the treatment plant. I mean, maybe there's something there that we should be doing differently than we are doing. It could be something operationally that we're doing, that we're not operating the plant correctly. It could be something operational at the seafood processor's facility that's causing the problems. And it could be unrealistic permit requirements. In some sense, there's some ambiguities in the permit that we think we need to resolve. I'll talk a little bit about later. And finally, it could be some reason that we just don't know at this point. And what we need to do is begin a considered analytical process that takes us through that, that looks at those problems, and helps us find the cause of these discharge violations, and that, we believe, is the first step in finding a solution. As part of the handout this morning, and I know that my board hates to get handouts at meetings, and I assume you do too, but I've included it for completeness only because to show you that we are taking some active steps to try to address this. We've gone out and gotten a proposal from a consulting firm. What it says at this point isn't so important, as it gives us a preliminary price. Their estimate is that it would cost $55,000 to do this study. But at the end of the study, they believe we'll have the information that we need in order to answer our questions. And that takes us to step two of the process. The first step is to do the study. The second step is to sit down, look at the results of the study, see what the solutions that they propose are, and see what the cost of those solutions will be. Both the capital cost of perhaps modifying the plant and the effect that it'll have on operating costs. And then we can have a discussion, a reasoned discussion, with our tenant about how the district and the tenant might share those costs and whether it will be cost effective for him to remain as a seafood processor in Crescent City. We certainly hope it will be, but that's a discussion we need to have in light of the information that we can glean from the study about what it's going to cost us all to operate into the future. If we have that discussion and have a positive outcome and come to a belief that we can make the modifications and continue to operate, then what we propose to do is seek grant funding or loan funding to construct any alterations that need to be done. We've had some preliminary discussions with other state agencies. They indicate that they would look favorably on this. The seafood processing industry has undergone some very, very difficult times in California, to the point where there's only a limited number of seafood processors left. I would guess there's probably no more than 20% of the seafood processing in California that there was 10, 15 years ago. I mean, it's changed that dramatically. And the industry is in trouble. The California Ocean Protection Council has announced a goal of trying to support seafood processing and the fishing industry as part of California's heritage and part of the tradition. So we think that there will be funding out there if we can identify modifications that need to be made here. So we're optimistic if we get to that step that we'll be successful. So what happens if we're not successful? What happens if we can't come to an agreement with our seafood processor on how to share the costs or can't find a cost-effective solution to these problems? At this point, the only alternative that we see before us is to close the treatment plant, the harbor treatment plant. We think that would be unfortunate. It's certainly not what we want to see happen, but that's also a solution to the discharge violations. If it turns out that we can't fix it and we have to close, there's certainly a solution, and we're not proposing to continue to operate and continue to have these violations. So what we're asking for today, I guess, is your help and your assistance in resolving this problem. The district, the Harbor District, doesn't have the financial capacity to do this by itself. We don't have $55,000 laying around to conduct a study. We actually don't have the money to pay the fines. We'll find it, but we don't have the money to do that either. And instead of just paying fines and ignoring the problem, we're hoping that we can find a way to put the money to use to try to keep processing that option viable in Crescent City, and trying to fix a problem rather than ignore it. So, with that. Final word I'd like to say is that we're not discharging that much. I think it's important to keep the violations in perspective that they did take place over a long period of time, and we think that they're not so egregious that we can't fix them. We believe that there are some solutions available, and we'd like your help in finding them. And with that, I'm done with my statement. I'd be glad to answer any questions. I'd point out that we have a letter of support from the city of Crescent City and from the county of Del Norte, and we also have Del Norte County Supervisor Mr. Hemmingson here today. He'd like to read that letter, but I think this is important. It's a part of our community. It's been a part of our community for many years. We think it's important to support the fishing industry. The fishing industry in Delaware County brought $20 million ex-vessel value into the community in 2004. That's a big part of our local community. So with that, I'd be glad to answer questions.
Do board members have any questions? Okay, does the enforcement staff have any questions?
I'm sorry, I have one question.
I was going to get to you as a separate category.
Okay, that's fine.
since you're split, you're split. I also wanted to ask Mr. Albert, since he's they lease the property and they have a property interest. Do you have any questions? Okay, and then I will get to our staff, whether advisory staff, whether you have any question.
Is the $55,000 engineering study that you're proposing, is that the compliance project? Is that what you're
intending? Well, that would be a portion of the compliance project. I mean, I understand, as I understand it, and I'm not an attorney, so forgive me if I'm wrong, but the whole process is what we view as a compliance project because the end result brings us into compliance. The engineering study is only the first step in defining the problems, defining the solutions, and defining the cost of a solution. And then at that point, we have to have an internal discussion and make a decision about whether we can go forward with modifications to the plant or whether we need to close the plant. But at that fork in the road, we'll make a decision, but either one of those will be designed to bring it into compliance.
Part of section, excuse me, part of section 13385K that Samantha read to you earlier in regards to a small community and allowing a small community to do a compliance project has three additional criteria that I think are important for us to discuss. It requires the regional board, before it allows a compliance project, has to make three findings as part of allowing a compliance project. One finding is that the compliance project is designed to correct the violations within 5 years. Two, that the compliance project is in accordance with the enforcement policy. And three, that the POTW, the publicly owned treatment work, has demonstrated that it has sufficient funding to complete the compliance project. And so those are three findings that are necessary for this. I think one of the issues that we have is whether the project is designed to correct the violations. What would be problematic for a compliance project is for you to do the engineering study and that be it, because that wouldn't be correcting the violations within 5 years. And the last finding that that you have to demonstrate sufficient funding, I think, could also be problematic for the board right now. One thing that we could do is to have the order requiring...
excuse me, Ms. Niemeyer?
Yes. Okay, I see. Actually, Kat has pointed out to me that they're going to come back. You're going to come back with a compliance project. So that would address that. A compliance project that the executive officer finds meets those requirements, and that would be sufficient.
Yeah, Ms. Niemeyer, I was prepared to address the provisions in 13385K regarding a compliance project. I had hoped that we could resolve the issue of whether or not they are eligible for the compliance project before we got into the details of an order addressing a compliance project. I thought the first item of business would be to make the determination that they were eligible.
Okay, and then we have two board members have questions. First, I'll call on board member Joaquin.
I just am curious. The discharge that's going into the ocean, I see through this list that most of the violations are suspended solids, there's a turbidity issue, and ammonia.
Yes.
And the suspended solids, am I to assume that these are just like pieces of fish that are...
That's what it would be, yes.
So my guess is that... let me ask you this question. Has there been any effort to find out what the effect has been in terms of any sea lions? Or I mean, are they drawing any animals to this area? Is this providing nutrients?
It doesn't seem to have any discernible effect on the outfall waters in the outfall area. I suspect it's because we don't discharge that much. It's a relatively small amount compared to the magnitude of the permit. The permit permits up to 800,000 gallons a day, and in the year 2006, only 1 month did we exceed 800,000 gallons. So we're discharging a relatively small amount of material, and it hasn't had any discernible effect on the outfall area. The city monitors that as part of their discharge requirements because we use the same outfall line that they use.
And maybe this is a better question for the seafood processor, but are any chemicals used at all in the processing?
Not in the processing outside of clean.
Excuse me.
Okay.
You'd need to come to the microphone, identify yourself, and who you're representing.
Don Alber, president and founder of Alber Seafoods. We don't use any chemicals in the processing itself, although we use cleaning chemicals to clean the plant.
The ammonia. Is that where the ammonia comes from?
If I had to guess, I would guess that ammonia is from crabs being stored. To be specific, probably urine from crabs being stored.
Could I comment on that? We've worked very closely with Mr. Albert's staff in the plant in Crescent City. They're very aware that they can't use chlorine-based products or ammonia-based products to clean the plant. So they've used biodegradable cleaning materials. When we had the ammonia problem, that was my reaction too, is where in the heck is ammonia coming from? And in my discussions with the water board staff, it appears to come from two places. One is the natural breakdown of amino acids apparently can create ammonia, and the other source of ammonia is crab urine. When you throw these crabs in hot water, that's part of the byproduct. So I'm told.
And so on the $55,000, is that an estimate that you came up with to determine these other causes?
No, that's in the engineering estimate.
Oh, that's in the engineering estimate.
That's their estimate.
I have no further questions.
Okay, Board Member Massey.
Mr. Chair, this is one that we've seen and we continue to see, and for Ms. Niemeyer as much as anything, the biggest single problem for small systems is getting the feasibility study done, because without that, you cannot get to the grants that you are looking for. I don't think anybody's interested in seeing anything closed down in Crescent City. So it's a question of how we do it. Now, if there's a criteria that we've got to meet that we are not meeting in order to get that to happen, then we'll find a way to get over that hump. But it's the feasibility study. Ms. Coleman is tired of hearing me talk about small districts and the fact that that's the first lump that is the hardest one to break. If we can do that, we can identify what it takes to clean it up. Certainly the technology is out there in the world that we live in. It's just a matter of how do you get there. So
I'm satisfied that the way the order is written will cover those requirements that need to be met.
Any other board member questions? Well, I will then call up Donald Alber. And Mr. Alber, ordinarily you'd be limited to 3 minutes, but since you lease the facility here and have a substantial property interest, you can go beyond that, although we would encourage you to keep it
short. Can stay under 3 minutes. My name is Don Alber. I'm the founder president of Alber Seafoods. We're a California corporation, started 12, 13 years ago. We've been in Crescent City in the existing plant 4 years. We also lease some dock space for a year or two, so maybe 5 or 6 years total in Crescent City. Our investment in purchases of product, plant equipment, employees in the last 4 years alone totaled over $14 million, close to $15 million. The products we process now in Crescent City continue to evolve and increase in base, but predominantly, as Richard said, or Mr. Young said, Dungeness crab, Pacific whiting or hake, and various other fish, including salmon. Our current, as Mr. Young said, the current infrastructure of the harbor district only allows us to operate if we discharge through the harbor treatment facility. As is noted elsewhere, we became very interested when the harbor was forced to send us a letter saying that they were considering closing the plant, or that they were going to close the plant in April, if they couldn't figure out how to deal with these discharge violations. Our corporate vision for Crescent City, the harbor, is to continue to provide local fleet access to producers, which is significantly important. If there are no producers within the port, products may still be pulled out of the water, but they would all go elsewhere, into Oregon, into other parts of California, and they certainly wouldn't benefit directly the local economies we do. We also want to create a venue, a showpiece, if you will, that would encourage tourism for Crescent City. We believe that a active live port, just like it is here, tends to pull in additional tourists and gives the city and the harbor a destination source for those tourists. To that end, we've been working very closely with the harbor about how to modify not just the plant, but how we operate so that the tourists can actually have an experience with an operating plant. We also view this as a significant opportunity for us to show what sustainable fisheries looks like and how that can benefit ports and how important that is for the environment and the economy overall. We think the solutions, as I think everybody here is saying, that the most important step in a solution is to identify the problems and the economic costs associated with those solutions. So we believe, as my attorney Tom Fitzgibbon has argued, that a compliance project is appropriate and should be allowed in this case to divert the penalty or to be used in lieu of paying a penalty fine. I also like to point out that this is a pretty interesting cooperative effort. The city, county, harbor, and the private industry in the harbor are all working together and all very interested in solving the problem. We all understand how difficult it is to operate the harbor treatment plant, and we're all willing to do what it takes to resolve those issues rather than continue to just let them stagnate. And lastly, I think it's a very unique moment in time, since, as Mr. Young said, there's been such a negative impact in the fishing industry in California as a whole. There is significant grant money and significant resources available to us if we can define that solution. Thank you.
Do any board members have questions? Does the enforcement team have questions?
I have no
questions. Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just wondering about the current discharges.
Yes, sir.
And how are they going?
The current discharges, as in since June or July?
Yeah, since the end date.
You would know better than I would.
Please step up to the microphone and identify yourself and what interests you're representing. Thank you.
Sorry. My name is Richard Young again. I'm the CEO and Harbor Master of the Crescent City Harbor District. We may have some additional problems that surround the definition of processing. What's a processing day? That's one of the things we need to clarify in the permit itself. The standards for discharges are different when processing occurs and when processing doesn't occur. And in the past, we've had a bit of a hazy definition of what's a processing day and what's not. And I think we need to refine that and have a better definition so we know what's allowed. But I think ammonia violations, ammonia's gone down. And there's another question that we need to resolve. This is These are some of the reasons why we need to do the engineering study, so that we can understand the process that's at work here better, so we understand why these violations occurred and what we can do to prevent them in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other board questions? Okay, any questions by the enforcement staff? Any questions by Mr. Young to Mr. Albert?
No, no.
And does our advisory staff have any questions?
Okay. None.
Excuse me, Mr. Corbin.
Yes.
Something occurs to me. The distinction, and perhaps it's in the material that we have just gotten, but according to Mr. Dunbar, the staff cost at this point is about $10,100. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And for the record, that's Mr. Dunbar speaking.
Thank you. What, assuming that this board agrees to a compliance project, at what level are you thinking of as a contribution to that staff cost? I'll probably address that to Mr. Young. Sorry, I didn't mean to catch you fly-footed.
And then you have to step up and identify yourself in the
interest. I understand.
Thank you.
I'm learning the procedure, yes. slowly but surely. This is Richard Young again. We had not given thought to that, the level of staff cost that would be appropriate. So I don't have
Opinion.
Thank you.
Any additional board questions? Okay, we have, I believe, then Gary Hemmingson from Del Norte County.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, board members. My name is Jerry Hemmingson. I'm Supervisor District 4 of Del Norte County. Del Norte County prepared a letter, which I'm not going to read because they've already said pretty much everything that I need to say. I appreciate Mr. Massey's comments on not wanting to shut down the facility. Our county needs all the economical help that we can get. We have offered our support for staff to help Mr. Young in any kind of effort that we can do to help him out, and we would appreciate any help from you. Thank you.
Okay. Any board questions? Okay, and I don't believe we have to, but in an excess of caution, I'll just ask whether the enforcement team has any questions. Does Mr. Albers have any questions?
I do not.
And does Mr. Young have any questions?
I do not.
And do our staff have any questions? Okay, I wanted to ask, did anyone in the public turn in a speaker slip that hasn't been called? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to close the... I'm sorry, one... Mr. Dunbar wants to speak.
He can close the hearing. I just wanted to go over the order portions that we were considering adoption. Should he close the hearing?
No. The enforcement team would like to respond to the specifics of the compliance project.
Okay, make your presentation.
If you
please.
Don't mind.
Yeah, I'm Tom Dunbar again. Water Code Section 13385K. States that three conditions under which compliance project can be allowed. Number one, that the community is eligible for it. Number two, that the community can pay for it. Number one would be that the community can pay for it. Number two would be that it can be accomplished within 5 years. And number three would be that it actually brings the facility into compliance. And the problem we're faced with right now is we don't know what the compliance project is. We're talking about a $55,000 study. Now, I just received a copy of this consultant's proposal this morning. I haven't looked it over. I'm not sure that $55,000 is necessary to do this study. I think that an evaluation does need to be done. I just heard this morning that the dissolved air flotation unit is not in service. I think that the staff needs to spend some more time looking at compliance. What I did fairly recently was look at the types of violations And in recent years, I would some of these violations occurred in 2001, and then the violations did not occur until 04, 05. I'm not sure what the difference is, but there's a big lapse in time where there were no violations. I know that we did change some of the terms of the permit to allow pump maintenance. Those are the non-processing days, and Mr. Young said there are some issues regarding non-processing and how do we define that. But what I'm looking at is in the last 3 or 4 years, the significant violations that are occurring are during pump maintenance. And pump maintenance is a small volume. There is no processing. I suggested that there's a possibility of plumbing pump maintenance discharges into the city's wastewater treatment facility. Very small. The city's wastewater treatment facility should not be impacted by that. It would get the treatment, the organic treatment, in the conventional treatment facility. It would go through the same discharge line. That action would eliminate pump maintenance violations. The only two remaining violations in the last 3 or 4 years were chronic. I guess there were two turbidities. So there might be some very minor violations with minor plumbing adjustments. And I think we need to look at this. And I don't think a $55,000 study right off the bat is what's needed. So what I would propose is that the board affirm the complaint in assessing mandatory minimum penalties, that the board assess a certain amount of that penalty go to the cleanup and abatement account, that the board allow a compliance project, and that the board allow additional time to come up with the compliance project. Typically, in board orders, we require that a compliance project be proposed within 30 days, staff responds, and that the compliance project is tweaked and ironed out in an additional 30 days. And I would suggest that the board allow 90 days for the district to propose a compliance project. That would give some time for staff to meet with the discharger, staff to meet with the consultants. Maybe the consultants can refine their proposal and come up with something a little bit more palatable, more affordable. And then after the compliance project is proposed, we would bring the order back to the board for final settlement. And the final settlement would define the compliance project, define when it needs to be completed, what the interim progress dates are, what needs to be done by certain dates, and final compliance date. And I have a draft order for you to consider if that's what you want to do.
I had two quick questions to staff. One of them is, can we allocate funds to a compliance project without it being specified because of the difficulty of the findings and those having it come back? Is that permissible?
It is permissible to do that. The way that it's currently written, Part 3 of the order says to approve a CP, the executive office, if the discharger chooses to propose a compliance project, it must submit a proposal within, and I guess we're going to put 90 days, of the date of this order to the executive officer for conceptual approval. And then it requires the executive officer to make those required findings. And if it's not acceptable, then the executive officer would allow the discharger an additional 30 days to submit a new or revised proposal. Or if they can't come up with anything, it would require eventually the payment of all of the monies to the cleanup and abatement account. And that would be sufficient. The executive officer has that ability to make those findings.
Can we add a provision they can appeal a disagreement to the board back? Yeah, well, I just want to make sure.
I don't see, though, Tom, in the order You want it to come back to the board? Okay, is that in the order somewhere?
That is not in the order. That's our typical procedure.
Okay.
In order to settle a matter such as this, it requires public input. If a compliance project is proposed, then we issue a public notice and a draft order that spells out the compliance project. We give at least 30 days comment period, and then we bring it to the board in a public hearing for adoption.
Is it? Does it state that anywhere?
It does not state that.
And just to be clear, that second hearing will not re-adjudicate the facts of this order. That second hearing is really for the purpose of approving the compliance schedule as it's proposed. And it formalizes that order and makes that enforceable.
I guess I would just recommend to the board in the motion, including that requirement, that the provisions of the compliance project come back to the board.
Okay, that's what I was driving at, is whether that would be a good idea to put in there.
Other
question, and this would go to Mr. Young and Mr. Albers as real parties of interest. Do you object to us making a partial set of findings and having the compliance come back?
No, I do not.
Okay.
No.
That was Mr. Young. Don Albers, I do not.
And I assume since enforcement staff suggested, they don't object. And so then I'll ask our advisory staff, do you object?
No, this is our normal practice.
Oh, okay, but
Mr. Chair, I would give you a motion to that effect.
I'll second.
And that would be essentially adopting the proposed alternative order. You would have a provision added to it that it would come back to the board.
Or put that into the motion.
Put that into the motion that you're moving to approve the order and require that the future compliance project come back to the board.
And we will leave the staff cost at $10,000 because it's staff cost that has been incurred already and will be incurred in the process of doing this. And so I would recommend that we keep that at $10,000.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Is there any discussion? Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. Abstentions? The motion carries. I just had one comment to staff in regard to the 5-year compliance. Because they've offered to potentially shut down the facility, it seems to me they have that. And also on the cost issue, since they the same issue would mean they could afford to shut down the facility. So it's a very unusual situation, but I think that might aid the findings.
Yeah, that's true. That's part of the enforcement policy. Says that the compliance project should be designed to bring the discharger back into compliance in a timely manner and or prevent future noncompliance. And shutting down the facility would be preventing future noncompliance.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Well, this concludes this action.